a lie, lie. You're telling a lie. I never know why. You don't know how to tell the truth.
Recognize that music, and your answer is To Tell the Truth, a game show that's aired in various forms since 1956. We're talking about America's longtime attention span for game shows and why new ones keep cropping up. Even pro basketballer LeBron James is getting into the game with his new NBC show, The Wall. Robert Thompson is here to fill us in on our game show fascination. He's a professor of pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, TV critics would tell us we're in this golden age of scripted television where highly produced shows like Game of Thrones and The Walking Dead are now becoming our staple diet, if you will. But game shows are hanging in there and even experiencing a revival of sorts. Wondering what you make of it. What's going on here?
Yeah, they are. Well, for one thing, there's now so many more places to have television. I mean, it used to be, what, in the late 50s when the Western took over, 8 out of 10 of the top 10 shows were Westerns. There were only 3 networks. When one genre really dominated, it was at the expense of other genres. Now, you're right, we're in the middle of this golden age of scripted drama, but those are on internet, and they're on cable, and there's all these other places. It's the networks that really seem to be now taking this page from their old book, which is the game show. Networks, of course, have been doing game shows since the radio age, since before television started, and they're back.
Well, a piece in the LA Times about game shows describes the genre as one that, quote, doesn't get much critical respect, kind of like the Rodney Dangerfield of genres. Is that a fair assessment? And if so, why do you think?
Well, I think it is, and I think it's probably not only a fair assessment that it doesn't get a lot of respect, but a fair assessment that it shouldn't get a lot of respect, in that game shows are not aspiring to. If we're looking, when we give respect to a show, to something that ambitiously attempts to do something in terms of drama and storytelling and all the rest of it, a game show isn't doing all of that. A game show is essentially, really, when you think about it, it's much more like like the broadcast of a sporting event than it is the broadcast of an episode of Walking Dead, in that you've got these specifically set rules, and you just keep putting people into the situation of those rules, and you turn the camera on and you see what happens. That isn't to say that some quiz shows haven't gotten, when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire first came out in, what was it, August of 1999, and that's when they were playing like 8 days in a row, special, week and a half long events. There were some critics who I think really thought that had brought a new element into the game show. Of course, again, we talk about game shows in very different ways than we talk about Mad Men.
Yeah. And I think there's a sense out there that game shows are never going to be the ratings blockbusters, but they're going to perform steadily enough to get the job done. Is that true? Are they kind of like blue chip stocks?
Well, it's true that oftentimes game shows are expected to just do, as you say, their yeoman service, but they have the potential to be enormous blockbusters. And we don't have to look back too far. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is a perfect example. That show, when it started in 99 and it had its August and then its November and then later in the winter, broadcast. That was one of the biggest hits that had come along in television in a long time. When they settled into their 4 nights a week, you could look into the highest rated shows of the week, and it would be Who Wants to Be a Millionaire at slot 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Mm.
So, and that wasn't the first time, by the way. Right before the quiz show scandals torpedoed the primetime game show, programs, the $64,000 question knocked I Love Lucy out of the number one slot. So when these things hit big, they can hit really big.
Remind us of quiz show scandals.
Well, back in the 1950s, quiz shows had a, and if you think there's a big, if you think quiz shows are coming back again now, there were lots more of them then. They were in the daytime, they were in prime time, and in the mid-1950s, they started being these big money shows. Mm-hmm. What had been in radio, the $64 question, became on television the $64,000 question. People on a show called 21 were getting complete total winnings in the six digits, which was unheard of back in the 1950s. Well, anyway, it turns out, we find out in the late part of the decade, that a whole bunch of these quiz shows had been completely fixed. They would have been too dull if you didn't make them, you know, have ties and cliffhangers and all the rest of it. And they turned out to be, that they were completely fixed, and this turned out that there were hearings, and a bunch of people were charged with perjury. Nobody ended up serving any time, but it was a huge scandal, and the quiz show pretty much disappeared from primetime with a couple of exceptions for several decades. It was banished to daytime.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're talking with Syracuse University pop culture professor Robert Thompson about the staying power of game shows on network TV. The Guinness Book of World Records says Vanna White is television's most frequent clapper. She averages more than 600 claps per show, Robert, which comes out to more than 4 million over the decades. Well, let's hear from you. What's your favorite game show? What did you grow up watching? And do you still watch it today? 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And are you enjoying the revival of old game shows like Match Game and To Tell the Truth? Robert, what about these revival of old game shows? Is there nostalgia here?
I think there's a lot of things going on. Yeah, yes, there is nostalgia for people who remember Match Game and To Tell the Truth and $100,000 Pyramid. A lot of it is, that's coming back again. And to demonstrate how they're playing the nostalgia, the Match Game, the set looks like the old Match Game from the 70s. The really long microphone looks like the old Match Game from the 70s. Alec Baldwin is, in fact, doing, to a great extent, an impersonation. Not quite, but he's very much channeling Gene Rayburn, who was the host of that show. So they're definitely going for people who liked these programs the first time around. But, of course, they're also attempting to get a whole new body of viewers who weren't around. After all, advertisers like 18 to 34-year-olds, and people that are 18 to 34 don't even remember the Match Game for the first time around.
Well, let's bring in a caller, Eric from Hazel Green. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
Good morning. What do you have to say about game shows?
Well, I used to watch Jeopardy when I was in college. This was 30 years ago. And I would watch Jeopardy while I was bartending. I would watch one episode of Jeopardy, and I found out that the same episode of Jeopardy was on a different channel about 2 hours later. So when the bar was full, I would appear to be very, very smart because I'd have all the answers. And it was really fun because if you remember Jeopardy, every once in a while they'd go to break and they'd come back from break and they'd say, you know, we discussed it with whatever panel we have, and we will take that person's answer. And during the commercial break, I would say, I know that answer is right. I know that answer is right. So
you could impress your friends there with the various telecasts of Jeopardy. Well, Robert, you know, I sat down in the dentist chair last week. What was in front of me but GSN, Game Show Network? That would suggest that reruns of classic game shows are profitable, too?
Right. Well, profitable on the scale of a specialty cable channel like GSN. It's not like GSN is getting 5 million people watching them. But a network like that can survive because you've got these game shows. They've already been paid for in the case of the reruns that they started with. And in the case of original shows that they're doing, a game show is really, really inexpensive. If at the top of the heap of expense you've got scripted TV shows, which are by far the highest priced things to make. Then you've got reality shows, but reality shows aren't as cheap as a lot of people think they are. Those are complex productions as well. They often have exterior shots and all the rest of it. A quiz show like The Match Game or like To Tell the Truth or like The Wall or any of these programs are so comparatively inexpensive to make. In some cases, the biggest line item is the prizes that they have to give out. They're all inside. You've got contestants who aren't stars so that they don't have to be paid. Simple sets that you use over and over and over again. When you think about it, a huge hit like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was making lots and lots and lots of money, and it wasn't costing all that much money, and people seldom won $1 million, so it wasn't even costing that much money there.
I'm going to hold you off there for a moment, Robert. Robert Thompson is a Syracuse University pop culture professor. We're talking about the staying power of game shows on network TV. Add your voice to the conversation, 800-642-1234, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll be back after this news from NPR and WPR. Stay with us. Yes, you're hearing The Price is Right. Here's your trivia question. What date did The Price is Right premiere with host Bob Barker? Answer, September 4th, 1972. And the host since 2007 has been Drew Carey. We're talking about the power of game shows this hour and what they say about our culture. You can jump in here at 800-642-1234. Is there a classic game show you'd like to see brought back? Perhaps you have game show trivia for our guest pop culture professor, Robert Thompson of Syracuse University. Robert, our caller Eric, before we went to break, was wondering, do people feel they learn a lot from game shows? Do we know anything about what we retain?
Yeah, well, first of all, Price is Right goes back even further. 1956, I think, that started with Bill Cullen. By the time it came into the 1972 iteration, which most people know with Bob Barker, it had already been on the air for like 9 years previous, up to 1965. So these things have been on for a long time. Anyway, yeah, I suppose. I mean, I don't know that anybody ever got an education from watching a game show, but you can certainly learn things, especially on a program like Jeopardy, which actually has the pretenses of being a little more higher brow than a lot of the rest of them. And oftentimes something you learn on or hear about on Jeopardy, now that we've got the internet and you can immediately go to your probably the very device you're watching the show on, and look stuff up. I suppose that quiz show can be a catalyst to learning stuff. The other thing, though, that the caller, I think, talked about, that great idea of watching the show first and then pretending not to have seen it 2 hours later, is that a show like Jeopardy really did allow an emerging generation of college-educated people. I mean, when that show started, a lot of people were starting to go to college that wouldn't have a generation before. And then they'd find that they'd get out of college and all that stuff they learned, they weren't really using in their jobs as accountants or even lawyers or doctors or any of that. And Jeopardy was a great way of getting to show off all that stuff you learned in your liberal arts education that you weren't using on a day-to-day basis.
Aha, very interesting. Well, let's
by the way, if Jeopardy made you feel, sometimes made you feel stupid because some of those questions were hard, it was paired with Wheel of Fortune, which always made you feel a little smarter.
There you go. Well, let's take another caller, Dan from Drummond. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Well, the show, the game show that I always loved, and I don't know, it might be on somewhere in the United States, but was Hollywood Squares.
With with Peter Marshall as the MC?
Yeah, yeah.
What did you love about it, Dan?
Well, the it seemed that the stars enjoyed themselves. It wasn't an extremely serious game like Jeopardy. And the one that I always cracked up with was McLean Stevens. because they always had him in the middle square.
Robert, what would you say about Hollywood squares?
Whoever got that middle square, that was considered kind of the starring role. Wally Cox had it for a while, who most people probably don't even remember, but who was a really interesting comedian. And probably the most famous person who sat in the middle square was Paul Lynde, who did it for years and years. That was a really interesting show because it was part game show and it was part comedy. And the same is very much true of the Match Game. With Hollywood Squares, you had not one, guest star, and starring guests were common in game shows, but you had nine of them, an entire tic-tac-toe grid filled with usually B-level, but not always that stars. And a lot of that show was designed to feature them. In fact, those people in those squares actually had were given ahead of time potential answers they could give that would be funny to the questions, and that was stated at the end in the credits, although it went by pretty fast. So that was a game show. There were contestants. They did win money, but so much of what was fun about that was seeing nine familiar celebrities messing around, and the Match Game, of course, is that same thing with six instead of nine.
Well, and what you say that they were prompted in the beginning, and they had some laugh lines in there in terms of what would get reaction. So it kind of walked a little bit of a line between scripted and non-scripted.
That's correct. And they had to be very careful about that after the quiz show scandals, of course. Before the quiz show scandals, there were no laws about this kind of thing. Nobody had thought to make such a law. But there would be after the quiz show scandals in the late 1950s. But with a thing like Hollywood Squares, while you could script or lightly script, as they would call it today, some of the responses and give people some jokes and all the rest of it, it never had anything to do with how the game itself would be played by the contestants. So the stars simply gave funny answers, and then the contestants had to decide, in the case of Hollywood Squares, whether they were correct or not. So it was scripted on one level, but the scripting had nothing to do with the outcome of the game itself. And some of the great, a lot of the great shows had that. You Bet Your Life, starring Groucho Marx, was semi-scripted, very little money involved in that show whatsoever. That was a classic game show, where the game show was simply an excuse to bring some regular people out that Groucho Marx could then riff with. And they would put those shows on film, and they were about twice as long as they ultimately ended up being what we would see. They'd let him go for the full 45 minutes or an hour, and then they'd cut it, and we'd get the best stuff. And that's, of course, what we saw on that program.
We're discussing America's fascination with game shows with our guest, Robert Thompson. He's a pop culture professor and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. What's your favorite game show? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. What game shows did you grow up watching and you still watch today? And what is your all-time favorite game show host and why? You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have a question from Facebook, Robert. How dependent are these game shows on the host?
I think in most cases, the host is really important. And I think that's getting to be more the case as we go along. For example, Regis Philbin was really, really crucial to the early success of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You could have put other people in there that it wouldn't have worked as well. And we can go back to shows way back to the 50s where a game show will start with one host, it won't be working, they'll put another host in, and it will take off. However, we also know that even though it's dependent upon a host doing a good job, game shows can continue without the original host. To me, Jeopardy was hosted by Art Fleming. He was the one who was hosting it when I was growing up as a kid, and that's the host of Jeopardy to me. But, of course, Alex Trebek took over and has now been doing it longer than anyone. Regis Philbin did Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but he was replaced by one and then a second person. So important that the hosts do a good job, but even classic hosts like Bob Barker can in fact be replaced. So host important, but format seems to be the king.
I always wonder how Pat and Vanna can still keep it fresh all these decades later.
Are they keeping it fresh?
To keep going and doing what they do decade after decade.
That.
Yeah, because
they've been doing that for a long time, and it's for the most part, it's always the same thing.
Well, as humans, we need change, and we need to do I marvel at their ability to go back and do the show, you know, time after time. Well, let's take
that is really extraordinary. I agree with you.
Let's take another caller here. We have Kenneth from Janesville. Hey, Kenneth.
Hello. Your guest explained to me why I'm so excited about these programs. I mean, especially Jeopardy, because all this information that I never use here, I have a use for. And I think it maintains my mental acuity in my old age. But what I'm wondering about, I remember Fred Friendly testifying before Congress about these programs. Way back, I think it was the 50s when they got into trouble with giving the answers and so forth, maybe a little later. He said, head of CBS, I think, was testified that all these programs were telecast for the average 13-year-old. Has the rating, has that rating, or is that, I forget what the word he used, but has that gone up or down over the years?
Robert, target audience and game shows.
Yeah, well, it's gone up. The networks would be more than happy if 13-year-olds watched these game shows because, of course, 18 to 34 is the target demographic, but they would love to get younger viewers than that. And on these network, ABC and NBC's game shows, average viewer is probably closer to into the 50s. They're, of course, aiming for younger than that. It's interesting, though, that quiz shows had a real evolution with regards to this, whatever you want to call it, intellectual level, in that it's true that by the time we get to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, for one thing, it's a multiple choice test, so pretty easy. And then for another thing, you got to cheat three times. One time you got to look at someone else's paper and phone a friend. One time you got to eliminate the choices to only two, and I forget what the other one was. So those were pretty simple situations. And then we've got some shows like The Wall and the rest where a lot of it is just plain dumb luck. But back in the 1950s, when Fred Friendly at CBS, that the caller was talking about, he was a CBS news guy who worked with the news god, Edward R. Murrow, those game shows could get incredibly hard. There was an episode of the $64,000 question. I saw it on film. I wasn't around for that show. And here was the question that they gave the contestant. They said, Sherlock Holmes often encounters adversaries who use aliases. We're going to give eight different names of these bad guys, and you have to tell us the alias and the story that they appeared in. That's a 16-part question, and if you only got 15 right, you didn't get the answer. Those quiz shows sometimes were like, master's degree defense meetings, and that has pretty much gone away. We don't get that anymore. Fred Friendly at CBS News was upset with the quiz show because the show he was doing with Edward R. Murrow, See It Now, one of the most important news shows that ever aired, essentially was knocked off the air when the quiz show started getting so popular they didn't have time to put on a news show like that, and it got bumped by none other than the $64,000 question.
Well, fast forward to today, and let us know, what what is going on with The Wall? LeBron James, an investor in this Plinko-like game show. What do we know about The Wall, Robert?
Right. Well, it debuted after The Celebrity Apprentice, and Celebrity Apprentice didn't do so well, so that debut of The Wall was pretty soft. But then it came back for its official time slot earlier, and it went, I think its ratings were up like 42%. So this is, I think, going to be one of those game shows like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, like Deal or No Deal, like a number of these programs that come onto primetime and burn very brightly for a while, but not necessarily for very long. And The Wall is one of those. Most of the primetime quiz shows now are revivals on ABC, Match Game, Pyramid, To Tell the Truth. The Wall is over on NBC.
And people have raked in many millions of dollars from game show wins. The first time a millionaire happened was in 1999 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
John Carpenter made the cover of People for that.
So how have winnings been over the decades on these game shows?
Well, they started out in radio where they were small. Game shows were more ways to feature regular people and less big money. As I pointed out, the $64 question was what it was called in radio. And there was a thing called Quiz Kids, where I think the grand prize was a $100 savings bond. And then when the quiz shows came back in the mid-1950s on television, that's when they became known as the big money quiz shows. And that's when they went to primetime. And back then you could get, but I think Charles Van Doren, who was one of the big winners, who made the cover of Time magazine, got a job on the Today Show thanks to being on a quiz show. And then, of course, it was turned out that he'd been lying, that it had been fixed, and he became disgraced. I think he won like $145,000 or something like that in 1950s dollars. So now, generally, one has to. There's two types of game shows. There's the one where the tension comes from the potential to win an enormous amount of money. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was that. Now The Wall is that, where I think, what, you can win up to $12, $14 million if everything
that's a lot of money.
Falls correctly. And so that's where the tension is that would be really amazing to see a regular person start the episode as a regular person and end with that much money. The other type of quiz show is where the money is not that big of a deal. It's the performances, and that would be the likes of To Tell the Truth and The Match Game, where the quiz show is just kind of an excuse for all the other hijinks that's going on in the program.
And explain for us where this money comes from. This get, you know, the winnings.
There's all kinds of income streams in game shows. For one thing, one of the really important things, it's one of the greatest genres for product placement. And not just the new idea of product placement. They've been doing this from the beginning. Probably the most egregious example of this would be The Price is Right. You could argue that The Price is Right is a bunch of commercials for consumer products with a game show built around them, because every time people have to bid on those things, of course, the announcer will give a little pitch about what that is as it's introduced. And, of course, those trips and those prizes and all of that stuff are, you can always hear the announcer at the end saying, a promotional consideration provided by, and then you get the whole list of people. So that's one thing. When it comes to the actual cash awards, that has to go into the production budget. But, you know, even $1 million, when you think about it, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Once you buy those lights, once you make that set, your biggest expense is, of course, paying Regis. And $1 million compared to what you've got to sink into a budget of a scripted show is comparatively inexpensive. And people don't win the big money that often.
We're talking about the power of game shows this hour with Robert Thompson. He's a pop culture professor at Syracuse University. So how have game shows impacted your life? You can jump in here at 800-642-1234. Is there a classic game show you'd like to see brought back? Perhaps you have some game show trivia you can share with Robert Thompson. And have you taken a game show test to try to get on a game show? We'd love to hear about that. You can post at the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, send us an email at talk@wpr.org, or give us a call at 800-642-1234. News is coming up next. You're listening to the Ideas Network. And that would be, phrase it in a form of a question, please. What is the theme from Jeopardy? Alex Trebek has been hosting it since 1984, but he got his start in broadcasting, working for the CBC as a newscaster in 1961. We're sprinkling in the trivia this morning as we discuss the longevity of game shows on network TV and why we still love to watch them. Do you watch game shows? Have you been on a game show or tried out for one? Have you taken the Jeopardy test? Let's hear about it at 800-642-1234. Robert Thompson stays with us. He's a professor of pop culture at Syracuse University, directs its Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture. Robert, how do you get on these game shows? Talk about the testing.
Yeah, well, there's calls for candidates for it. In the case of Jeopardy, I have never done this, but apparently it's quite a quite an ordeal. You go in and then you take a test, and then you get into a another category if you do well, and gradually they filter down. It's kind of like getting into college, from the way I've heard it described. That's in the case of Jeopardy, though, which is this, you know, kind of headier kind of thing. The other ways you get on, The Price is Right likes to have people who are going to be jumping up and down and who are going to be interesting to watch. And the way they often did it with Price is Right is while people were standing in line to get into the studio audience, because, you know, on that show they take them right out of the audience, and they would have employees of the show kind of walking up and down the lines and chatting with people and then trying to find people that they think would be good on television. Because if you just drag people randomly out of the studio audience, you could get a lot of boring folks up there. They want people who are going to scream and jump up and down and talk a lot and all the rest of it. And so those people that are asked to come on down are not simply randomly chosen. They're, you know, they essentially are auditioning online, is how I've heard it described.
Well, let's take
not online, online internet, online
in the queue.
Online.
Yeah, let's take a caller now, Judy from Milwaukee. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What do you have to add about game shows?
Well, my son was a contestant on Jeopardy, so he explained the process that your guest just did about taking a test and then a live kind of playing the game. But when he was on, I was just kind of upset with Jeopardy because he didn't win the amount of money that showed for him being in second place. He only won $2,000.
So, and how does that work in terms of the money you take away when you don't win?
It's just standard now. They actually put it on the screen, but they didn't at the time he was on. Second place gets $2,000, third place gets $1,000. The winner gets, you know, the money that they won on the show. But out of his winnings, he had to pay his expenses for traveling to Los Angeles for filming it.
So, Robert,
how much did it cost for him to be on Jeopardy?
Well, I kind of boycott Jeopardy now. I think they kind of stiffed him on his winnings, but that's their policy.
Yeah, Robert, what is it about then, if you don't win, you do walk away with some money, but then you've had to go there for the taping?
Right. I mean, being on a game show is obviously better odds than playing the lottery. But if your child, if you say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they say, I want to be a game show contestant. That's probably not a really a secure future, because first you've got to get on and then you've got to win. And if you don't, I'm sure many people have lost money being on game shows when we're talking about these big money game shows. But, you know, we haven't talked about there are all kinds of different game shows. And there was a guy named Chuck Barris. Most people know him through the George Clooney movie that was semi-autobiographical, that from Barris's book. But this guy during the 1970s did shows like The Dating Game and The Newlywed Game and his magnum opus, The Gong Show. And these were game shows, and they, in the case of Newlywed and Dating Game, you actually did win prizes. But these were programs that did so much else than just being a game show. In many ways, The Dating Game kind of was the embryo of what would become The Bachelor and all of these other courtship, romance sorts of reality shows. The Newlywed Game was more about showing goofy newlyweds, and the prizes weren't that big. I mean, in the end, if you won the Newlywed Game, you know, you got a bedroom set or you got a refrigerator and a range. I mean, some of the best game shows were not about about winning at all. I forget what the Gong Show gave you. You got a little trophy and some other goofy thing. The $1.98 beauty contest, the prize was $1.98, a bouquet of vegetables and an old sock.
So there's just the cachet of saying you did this or you were on.
Right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, when they go on a game show, they would obviously love to win lots of money. People that go on the wall today dream of winning millions of dollars. But part of the fun, of course, is being able to tell your friends that on November 7th, I'm going to be on Jeopardy. Don't forget to watch.
Well, James from Baraboo called in to say shows like American Ninja and The Biggest Loser really seem to be taking off. They don't necessarily win money all the time, but they enjoy being able to conquer obstacle courses and things like that. He wants to ask you about the rise of these types of game shows.
Right. These are these kind of blending of the game. I mean, the reality show kind of came out of the game show, but then they've blended. And the Biggest Loser, of course, is something of a game show. They're competing, and whoever loses the most weight. The American Ninja Warrior, you go through all of these bizarre obstacle things, which goes way back to the 50s. A show called Truth or Consequences made people do goofy things, not quite as elaborate. And, you know, one could argue that even a program like Survivor is a game show to some extent. They do those challenges to win immunity, and there's money at the end, so there's a game show element to that. Even American Idol was a game show with a slow elimination, and in the end, people actually won money and a record contract and all the rest of it. So reality shows have taken the competitive idea of the game show, and they've yanked it out of the studio and, put all this extra drama into it. Those kinds of shows, however, are a lot more expensive to make than simply Alex Trebek reading a bunch of questions to three people behind podium.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a secret sauce to game shows? Is there something that if you have a formula, you know that it will work for a game show?
No. If there were, you and I would be making one right now and not having this conversation. because this is not science, it's show business. And a perfect example of that would be when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire came out in the summer of 99 and became this spectacular hit. All of the other networks jumped on the bandwagon and thought, okay, big money game shows, really successful here. We'll simply do another big money game show and we'll be really successful. And it didn't happen. They brought back 21. It failed. They brought a show called Winning Lines. It failed. There were a whole bunch of millionaire-like programs that were plugged in to the formula, and they didn't work. So the secret sauce, if you're looking for it, is this complicated calculus that nobody quite knows what it is, which is, I suppose, some combination of the host, that's really important, the format and the structure of the show, which can be really simple, but it's really important, and then the nature of the contestants that you get on. Casting these contestants is also important, because if the people aren't interesting, no matter how good the format is or how good the host is, those shows depend a lot on people they're essentially taking from off the streets, and they have to be careful how they choose them.
Do you think that this trend of game shows being revived will continue for the foreseeable future?
Yes, I think the game show, like many other things, will go through generic biorhythms. The sitcoms have their great years, and then they have their not so great years, and then they come back again. I think the same is true of the game show. I don't think they're going to take over primetime the way they did in the mid 1950s again, but there's quite a few of them on now, and they're doing pretty well. And then they'll probably wane for a bit. But I think there will always be game shows of some kind somewhere on television, especially now where television includes not only networks, but cable channels and online venues and all the rest of it. So the game show's never going to completely go away. And The Price is Right, which has now been on since the 1950s, itself may never go away.
And Robert, is there a particular game show that you would love to be on?
Oh, no, I would hate to be on a game show because I have this huge fear that I would get stuff wrong in front of millions of people. I was once asked to be one of those experts on, remember the new Who Wants to Be a Millionaire had those three wise men or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
And I refused to do that for fear that in front of millions of people in my own field I'd get something wrong. And sure enough, the night I would have been on, there was a pop culture question. I didn't know the answer, and to this day I sigh a sigh of relief that I did not agree to go on that show. That would have been a horrible experience.
Well, Robert, it's been so much fun. Thank you so much for joining us.
That was lots of fun. Thank you.
Robert Thompson is a professor of pop culture. He's the director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. We can continue this discussion about game shows on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Post your favorite ones. We'd love to hear about them. Always keeping us guessing on what we'll discuss next. Thanks to producers Chris Molina and Nyjah Ellison for this segment. Stay with us. Much more to come. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for Joy on the Joy Cardine Show.